This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Somerset Is Go. It's the programme that's helping you get through the recession by finding out how other people are coping and giving you hints and tips and all sorts of other things to help you through these difficult times. Now, you may not be unaware of the fact, but today was the pre-election budget day. At about 12:30, Alistair Darling stood up and gave his last budget before the next general election. And here on the programme, we're going to be talking about that budget, analysing some of the facts and figures in it, and seeing what it really means for you. And I've got a special guest in the studio. His name is Simon Dunton from Milstead Langdon, the Chartered Accountants in Taunton, and I'll be coming over to Simon in just a minute. But it would seem to be quite a good idea to find out what people in the street think about what something like this should mean to them. So Eddie Gaines was out and about in the streets of Wiveliscombe a little earlier today, and this is what he found.
So here I am in White Hart, centre of Wiveliscombe, and I'm with Simon, one of the licensees. Simon, there's a budget coming up in a couple of days' time. What are you looking for from the Chancellor to help you and your business?
I think that what will be of help to us will be some sort of redress between the duty that's or the pricing strategies of the supermarkets. So obviously there's a lot of cheap promotions that the supermarkets do as lost leaders to get customers in. Obviously that doesn't with all the drinking at home, that doesn't help help the pub trade as a whole.
Because the thing about people drinking at home, it's sort of like totally uncontrolled, isn't it? But at least here in the pub, if you think a customer's had too much, you can always stop selling him the alcohol, can't you?
Or her. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a valid point, actually, yeah. I mean, it's a very valid point. But I think it's also more to the point of the fact that, there is... If there was an incentive to come out and support the pub, which is a great British tradition. I mean, it's not all about, drinking absolutely loads and loads and loads. I mean, that's not what it's about. But I think it's the fact that there has been this shift, because the fact that people can get relatively inexpensive drink and have it at home, they can have more events at home. And that does, it makes pubs have to, I mean, we have to work that much harder to attract our customers in.
And of course, you've made it smoke free, etc., which was a requirement of the government, and it's really a quite nice, pleasant place to actually have a drink and socialise with your friends and family, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think. I actually don't personally think that the smoking ban has had a great effect on the British pub trade. I think there are one or two sectors that it will have affected, but overall, I really don't think it's had the impact across the pub network in the UK. The bigger problem, I think, is for a lot of the tenanted pubs that are tied in, and they're forced to have to sell their beers higher because the pub companies have actually increased their sort of debt mounting, which means they have to charge high rents and also high prices for the tied beer. So, as I say, everybody thinks the smoking ban's the worst thing that happened to pubs, but I genuinely believe it wasn't.
No, because it's really pleasant, very pleasant to come into the pub. I mean, here in Wiveliscombe, we had three pubs about a year ago, and now we're down to two pubs. So, so anything that can help you remain in business has got to be a positive thing, hasn't it?
It certainly has.
Well, thank you very much, Simon.
Cheers, thank you.
Now I'm talking to Tom, who runs his own small business. Tom, as a small business, what are you looking for from the Chancellor?
The main thing would be less red tape, less form filling, just simplification of accountancy practices, taxation rules and regulations, etc. But highly unlikely to come our way, so I suppose the best we can hope for is to be no worse off than we are after the budget as we are before the budget.
Of course, that's a small business. I mean, you need to keep up to date with what you can claim and can't claim, and often you've got to pay for that information as well, haven't you?
As a small business, it's virtually impossible to keep up with the intricacies of legislation, so you do rely on professional advice, and yes, that does cost you, and hopefully at the end of the day the advice you receive and the cost of that advice is offset by the benefits that you reap from it, but it's the only way that you have any chance of remaining legal, decent and honest.
Of course, recently there was a reduction in the level of VAT down to 15%. Did you actually find that helped your business?
Made very little difference at all, really. The reduction in VAT only really helped people that were at the end of the taxation chain. Most of the people we do work for are, like ourselves, intermediaries, and they either pass the VAT on to their clients, or if they are end clients, they can reclaim the VAT. So VAT, in many respects to us, is a paperwork exercise which to a certain extent has a minimal effect on us.
All right, anyway, thank you very much, Tom. Here I am in the Rotary meeting. Peter, what would you like to see in the budget that's coming up on Wednesday?
Well, whatever I would like to see will probably not be there because it's not affordable. So, you know, we can expect to see the start of tax increases. I can't see the Chancellor handing a lot out, not bearing in mind the state the economy is in. Many of the things are already in train, like the national insurance increases, you know, all of those are happening, the 50% tax to higher earners, all of those things are in train. So, you know, I think it'll be a pre-election budget with a little tinkering at the edges, nothing radical at this stage, wait till after the election.
I mean, I think savers have taken quite a hammering, haven't they, over the last couple of years and whatever. Do you think there should be something more for pensioners, or, you know, people have traditionally saved all their lives and yet now they can't see much return on their savings?
Well, that's true. Interest rates are low. So, you know, actually, although we might think saver interest rates are low, bearing in mind that, you know, it's usually more than the borrowers have to pay, it's just a reflection that interest rates are generally low anyway. And inflation has been low. I mean, some people may expect it to increase, but that's the situation, I'm afraid.
All right, thank you very much, Peter.
And some comments there for people in, from people who have listened. Peter Welsh, who was a Wibby Rotary Club member, retired, and he was previously in the nuclear industry. Simon Tanner, licensee of the White Hart, and Tom Jones, a sole trader in the town who runs a specialist equipment sales company. So one or two mentions of things that they'd like to see in the budget there. Well, we're going to find out what actually happened, because at this point I'm going to introduce Simon Denton. I'm going to get it right this time, Simon. I apologised. I gave you the wrong name.
No problem.
Simon Denton from Milstead Langdon. Simon, what's your connection with the financial services industry?
Well, I'm a partner at Milstead Langdon. We're a firm of chartered accountants and business advisors. And I am a tax partner there, so I advise my clients on all the aspects of taxation and picking their way through the myriad of different rules and complexities that some of your listeners there were mentioning.
What was it drew you to the financial world?
I suppose I've always been quite numerate. I've always enjoyed numbers, and I'm fortunate that I've always had the sort of head that is very good at remembering seemingly random or useless pieces of information. And so when I trained that to be able to remember sort of tax rules and tax practices, I found that actually the job suited my mindset very well.
I would imagine that if you've got that sort of a mind, budget time can be quite exciting because you've got to pick your way through the various things that have been said on the television and on the radio. But what you've got to look at is the actual underlying reality of what is being said and put it in the context of things that are happening at the minute, in the context of things that have already been implemented 2 or 3 years ago.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things, I would typify my daily job as being one of problem solving, that is taking situations that clients have, applying them to the rules in existence and trying to find the most favourable way through those rules. And of course those rules are constantly changing, which means I'm constantly being kept on my toes and having to keep up to date with those changes and to track what we find these days. Budget day is a bit less of a single event in any tax year than maybe it would be if you were to go back, say, 10 years. And we now are always juggling announcements that are made at numerous points during the financial year and indeed in previous budgets and previous pre-budget reports. So it's quite a juggling act.
Yeah, it's in the nature of things on budget day for people to present the best face on everything that they do. And so you've got Alistair Darling standing there saying, well, yes, I mean, we're going to borrow this amount of money. We borrowed less than that because we think tax revenues are higher than they would have been because employment is better than we thought it was going to be. And all the time they're putting the positive view of things that are happening. One of the questions that I've got to ask you is, looking at what was said in the budget, you would think that we were turning the corner from what was being said and the savings that were reputedly being made. What is the reality on the ground?
I mean, what I see from talking to local businesses is that I don't think the recession has been as bad in the southwest as perhaps it's been in other parts of the country. I'd like to think that's because typically southwest business people are a little more conservative with the small c. They've perhaps not borrowed as much as they could. They've maybe not expanded as quickly as some other businesses may have done up country, but they've done so when they have expanded, they've done so in a sustainable way. And I'd like to think that that's why perhaps the recession hasn't hit as badly down here as one hears it has hit up country.
Well, this begs a question. You say that industry is coping better down here than in other parts of the country. Now, is this because industry is doing some good housekeeping, it's cutting down on inefficiencies, it may be getting rid of the odd member of staff here and there, making the very best of its assets? So is what you're saying the fact that the burden is being carried by the people right at the bottom end who actually work for these companies because some of them now no longer have a job?
I mean, I think to an extent that probably is true. I think there has been a collective tightening of belts of businesses all around the region, and they are having, I think, for probably 5 years leading up to the credit crunch, a lot of businesses were focusing on simply growing their turnover, literally to the expense of their profitability. I think an awful lot of people now have recognised the importance of running efficiently, and that inevitably will cascade down.
Yeah, so it's the usual story. It's the person on the end of the chain that's actually bearing the load. And in many, many cases, it's the person who's least able of bearing it, isn't it? It's the hardest.
I think that is sometimes the case. I think to put the case for the business owner, though, there are an awful lot of business owners who are actually working very long hours. And when you distill the amount they may be left with in their business after they've paid their employees as a function of the hours they put in, on an hourly rate they're probably on an awful lot less than some of their employees.
I must admit I know that one because I ran my own business for 30 years, and in the first 5 or 6 years, and maybe an awful lot longer than that, you're working sort of 14, 18 hours a day sometimes doing this. And it's, if you were paid at an hourly rate, it would be totally ludicrous. And in fact,
absolutely.
I think 20 years into my business, my hourly rate was still less than I would be getting for something which required a great deal less skill than I had.
Indeed. I think there are an awful lot of people that run their own businesses that do so for an awful lot of other reasons rather than purely financial. They're doing it because they like to be in control of their own destiny. They like to maybe be giving something back to the community in terms of employing local people as well.
Yes, I invented a business to suit myself. There wasn't anything that matched me, so I invented one to fit me.
I don't think you're alone in that.
Okay, this leads us very neatly. As I say, we're talking about the Southwest and business in general. Southwest is very dependent on service industries. Has this made a difference in the way that the Southwest copes with the economic downturn?
Well, I think actually that's a national factor as well. One of the things that I've been reading sort of economically has been that if you take the last recession at the beginning of the 90s, there was quite a lag be between the time at which growth began again in the economy and when employment started to pick up. I think the lag was sometimes in excess of 12 months in different regions in the country. This year, this time round, things seem to be a lot swifter. Employment is already, I mean, it rose in the last, I think figures said that it rose in the last month, and I wouldn't mind betting that a lot of that is down to the fact that we have a much more heavily service-led economy these days. And if you think, if you take the picture of a manufacturing industry, when demand starts to fall in a manufacturing industry, typically what will happen is they will start to shut down one of their production lines and only run one rather than perhaps two. There will be the associated redundancies that goes with that. When demand starts to pick up again, typically they will try and run the one production line that they've been running on for a while harder by making their staff work longer hours before they will actually open a second production line and re-employ people. With the service sector, you're really your capital there is the people you employ, and so if you need to grow, if you're looking again at growing your business, you'll be looking typically to employ more people. And I think that's why employment is picking up far quicker this time than it did 20 years ago.
We say that employment is picking up, but are we looking at full-time, long-term jobs, or are we looking at short-term, short-contract jobs?
I think probably the latter. I think at this stage, I think there's an awful lot of uncertainty about how sustained the recovery is going to be. And I think an awful lot of businesses are looking at not tying themselves into too much in the way of long-term commitments.
So when Alistair Darling says that there's been more income on taxation on wages, it could be based upon this fact that people are taking short-term, short-contract jobs in a very volatile market, and the whole thing could turn on its head again in another 12, 18 months.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think everyone is concerned that there could well be a double dip, and whilst I try as much as I can to be as positive as I can, one of the concerns I think a lot of us have is there are some 250,000 businesses that are currently paying their taxes by instalments under the business payment helpline, and I think there's somewhere in the region of £5 billion that's tied up in this programme. And whilst it was announced today that that's going to be extended, at some point that tax is going to have to be paid back, and there will be casualties as a result of that.
So there are a number of bombshells on the way for people in 3 or 4 or 5 years' time. The day of reckoning will come on these.
Yes. I mean, at the end of the day, there will inevitably be some businesses that are living on borrowed time, and when that tax has to be repaid, they won't be able to repay it.
Let me pick up on some of the issues now that came out in the budget, particularly regarding small businesses. First one I was going to look at, there's going to be a £2.5 billion package to help small businesses and to encourage key skills development. Now, this is for small and medium enterprises. What's the definition of a small and medium enterprise?
It really depends on what piece of legislation you're looking at. It would be lovely if we had one single small, medium-sized enterprise definition, but the reality is we don't. We have a number. If you look specifically at some of the tax measures, it refers to a medium-sized enterprise having an upper limit of turnover of around about £12 million and a balance sheet of around about £6 million and employees of about 250. But there are a number of different definitions. Some of those definitions have come from Europe, so they're rather helpfully in euros as well.
Well, the question, of course, that everybody's going to be asking is, you look at a small town like Wiveliscombe or Milverton or Wellington, and many, many businesses are family enterprises. They maybe employ 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. Their turnover is nowhere near the limits that you're talking about there. So are they actually going to benefit from this initiative?
In theory, yes. What is always the case with such these initiatives is the devil is in the detail. Detail is not yet out. I suspect there will be an awful lot of red tape and an awful lot of form filling before local businesses are able to take advantage of the measures that have been announced today.
Well, this was one of the things raised by somebody in the Vox Pops that were at the beginning of the programme. They said, less form filling, please. Make things simpler. Make it easier to get money. Make it easier to do things and actually make a difference. Do you think that's going to happen?
No. Not so long as we have the current political climate. You know, it's not a particular political point, but the Treasury, whichever colour they are representing, they have a lot to gain from the complexity in the system. It gives them an awful lot of different rules that they can tinker with and change and increase taxes without people truly understanding what is going on.
Do you know, that sounds devious, doesn't it, really?
I think you find it is, yes.
I often do feel that some of these things are so complicated to apply for that a lot of people say, I just can't do this.
I think you're absolutely right.
And you're saying it might be policy that this is so?
Far be it from me to be that cynical.
No, of course not. I should not have asked you the question. That's okay. But it is difficult for small businesses. As I say, the cry from the streets is, will it help us directly? The answer is that you've said to me, yes, it can help you, but you've got to be prepared to jump through one or two hoops and climb over a few hurdles first.
Absolutely, yes.
Does this mean that it could take a very long time in order to benefit from a scheme like this?
Yes, I think it probably will. I think... you know, there will be an inevitable lead time in terms of getting paperwork together, being able to actually complete the forms. You've got to remember is, in order to be able to apply for this, this will be yet another burden on already stretched small business owners who, you know, will already probably be writing up their accounts, doing their VAT returns, all these sorts of things in their own time, you know, after the working day has, for most people, many people, has finished. It inevitably is going to take time. It's not going to be top of their priority list. And then even when the application form is in, it'll have to be processed. And we know that the wheels tend to typically run quite slow.
Well, this is the problem, of course, because many very small businesses need a quick fix. They can't wait for things. Things, you know, if something takes 6 months or 9 months to do, it could well mean the survival or otherwise of the business before it happens. So there's no quick way.
Yes, and I think, another feature that we're finding a lot at the moment is just the sheer length of time. There are a number of my clients that are in a situation where they're due a tax refund. They'd be due a tax refund from the 31st of January. We're now in the latter stages of March. They haven't received that. And, you know, they'll be needing, in many cases, they're needing that money to help their businesses run.
This is something that you sort of see it on the ground. You hear the words coming from above, but you see it on the ground and you do wonder what differences are actually being made. Can I move on now to the access to finance scheme? Now, in the last 6 months, RBS and Lloyds, the nationalised banks, supplied £38 billion worth of finance, and the government said they want them to supply £94 billion worth in the coming year. Now, that's not as straightforward as it looks, because you were talking earlier about getting access to the finance and saying that they might actually have some difficulty finding people to take it up.
Absolutely. I mean, in my day-to-day job, I come into contact with a lot of people, a lot of bank managers, and the word I'm getting from many of those is they have the funds to lend, they just don't have people to lend to. I think an awful lot of local businesses are taking, as I mentioned before, a very conservative approach. You know, they're not looking to expand their business at the current time, they're not looking to take on more borrowing. And so I think the government is going to have a really stern job, or the banks rather are going to have a really stern job meeting those targets that the government have set.
Yes, so once again, it's something that looks good on the outside when you say, oh, there's going to be 90-odd billion pounds put into the business sector. But the reality of it is, people are going to be cautious. There will be various reasons why the take-up is not there. So the effect may not be as great as it might outwardly appear from the amount of money that's been put forward.
Indeed, but it does make a good headline, doesn't it?
Especially pre-election, yes. I think it rather well. It does. Yeah. Let me have a look at one other aspect of this. Now, business rates. What changes are there in business rates?
Well, it's good to see that there's been an exemption for small businesses. They're going to be exempt from business rates for 12 months from October later this year. That'll be for all properties with rateable values of up to £6,000. They'll pay no business rates for the 12 months. And I think that's a very welcome fillet for businesses in this area.
And another fillet for businesses might be that the government say they're going to outsource 15% of what they need to small businesses and medium-sized businesses. I wonder how that's going to work.
Well, again, I think this may be a measure that is all about grabbing the headlines. Once again, the devil will be in the detail there. I know from a number of my clients that do contract with the public sector, we mentioned earlier the hoops and the hurdles, they are pretty stern when it comes to supplying the public sector, and so I don't think that is going to be anywhere near as easy as it sounds.
Yeah. Another thing, that, again, there's a doubling in the annual allowance for investment in plant and things, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Up to a limit of, is it £100,000?
That's right. We've had a concept for the last year or so called the annual investment allowance, which has enabled a company to deduct 100% of capital expenditure against its taxable profits up to a limit of £50,000. This would be typically expenditure on, for example, machinery, computers, those sorts of things. That limit has been doubled from the 1st of April this year to £100,000. I certainly welcome that as a measure. It's great to see that capital investment in your business is going to become more tax efficient. Hopefully that will trickle through into increasing supply for and demand for people that actually supply that machinery. So that should have a positive impact.
Once again, I'm thinking of the very smallest businesses. Of course, there are many businesses who don't have the ability to do that because their profits are not big enough in order to take advantage of the degree of investment they might make.
Absolutely. For the smallest of businesses, unfortunately, this is not going to be a great help. But for manufacturing businesses, even relatively small manufacturing businesses, if you are needing to replace a printing press, etc., £50,000 doesn't go an awful long way. Yeah. So it is still very welcome.
Another change is the rate of tax for entrepreneurs, the rate of capital gains tax. What's happening there?
Well, it was a much-touted rumour before the budget that capital gains tax was going to go up. I'm pleased to say that that hasn't happened. I still remain to see whether that will happen post-election. But we still have the situation where we have an 18% rate of capital gains tax, which is reduced to an effective rate of 10% for gains which qualify for entrepreneurs relief. That is a relief available for people that run their own businesses or run their own small companies. Typically, this limit used to be restricted to entrepreneurial gains of a maximum of £1 million in the individual's lifetime. It's that limit that has now been doubled to £2 million, and I think that's a very welcome measure. It sounds, £1 million sounds a lot of money when you see it written, or when you hear it said, but £2 million is a much better limit. You don't have to have that big a business to be able to sell it to a national company for £1 million. It's surprisingly how small a business can be to still be worth that money.
And so the whole point of this is the person that's put in the initiative and the effort into the business will get more of it back for themselves.
Absolutely.
If they transfer their business before it reaches the £2 million mark.
Absolutely. And not just that, but there are many people that will build a successful business, sell it, and they're not going to sort of swan off and retire to the sun. They'll build another business. And it's great to see that if they build another business, make another one a success, there's potentially more left of their lifetime allowance to be able to benefit again in the future.
A final aspect, looking at the sort of the business side of this, is the time to pay scheme for business taxation. Now, this has been running in the past. I gather it's been extended.
It has been extended. It's the hint, really, from the Chancellor is that they're going to extend it for the lifetime of the next Parliament. So I think that's, again, a bit of a political stunt or a plea for them to be voted for, because otherwise, you know, possibly the other lot may be demanding your tax in a bit sooner.
Yes, I think we've got to put this in the context of the forthcoming election. Obviously, as I say, what they were saying puts the best possible gloss on the situation. I mean, it's all very well saying, you know, we are borrowing X billion this year, which is 11 billion less than we thought because of our tax incomes. But in the scheme of things, the amount of money they're actually borrowing is immense, isn't it?
Well, I don't know about you, but I find it almost impossible to actually visualise 167 billion, which is where public sector borrowing is at the moment. I just find that too big a number to really put into any kind of context.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I think we'll break off at that moment for a very short and mildly appropriate musical interlude, after which I think Robin will come in with the latest budget headlines. So I hope you enjoy this.
I've got £90,000 in my pyjamas. I've got 40,000 French francs in my fridge. I've got lots of lovely lira. Now the Deutsche Mark's getting dearer, and my dollar bills would buy the Brooklyn Bridge. There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash. There is nothing
nothing quite as wonderful as money.
Money, money, money.
There's nothing like a newly minted pound.
Money, 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 money.
Everyone must hanker for the butchness of a banker. It's accountancy that wakes the world around.
Round, round, round.
You can keep your Marxist ways, but it's only just a phase. For it's money, money, money makes the world go round.
Money, 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 money.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
You're listening to Somerset Is Go on Ten Radio on 105.3 FM, streaming on the web at tenradio.org. It's 5.30 on Somerset Is Go, and here's Robin with the latest budget headlines.
There's to be a 3% fuel duty rise to be phased in 3 stages between April and January next year, rather than in one go next month. Tobacco duties up 1% from midnight on Sunday, and by 2% in real terms each year until 2014. Stamp duty is scrapped for homes below £250,000 for first-time buyers, but only for 2 years, and the stamp duty on residential property sales over £1 million is to increase to 5% from April next year. Government borrowing this year is now forecast to be £167 billion. That's £11 billion lower than predicted in December. The Chancellor announced a £2.5 billion package for small businesses to boost skills and innovation, and a one-year business rate cut from October to help 500,000 companies. The investment allowance for small firms is doubled to £100,000. The one-off bank bonus tax has raised £2 billion. That's double the amount forecast. There's a guarantee of a basic bank account for 1 million extra people, and RBS and Lloyds Bank Group are to provide £94 billion in small business loans. The annual limits on individual savings accounts, as ISAs, will rise from £7,200 to £10,200 next month, and there are no changes to VAT, national insurance or income tax rates. The inheritance tax threshold is frozen for 4 years. Winter fuel allowance rates are extended for a further year, and there's a £4 rise in child tax credit for parents with young children from 2012. Cider duty is to rise by 10% above inflation from midnight on Sunday, and the duty on wine, beer and spirits is to rise by 2% from then, with a further 2% rise planned for 2 years from 2013, about which the Somerset County Gazette reports this evening. Julian Temperley of Burrow Hill Cider at Kingsbury Episcopi says it's pretty depressing and will put between 5 and 10 pence on a pint. There could be more to come, which will have a knock-on effect. Taunton Deane's Liberal Democrat MP Jeremy Brown said the Chancellor's wrong to be targeting cider for tax rises. It'll raise little money, but it'll severely damage small manufacturers. Mark Formosa, the Conservative parliamentary candidate for Taunton, said, "I can understand targeting super-strength drinks because of the social problems irresponsible drinkers can cause, but it isn't fair to slap a hefty tax on those who responsibly drink Somerset ciders." And thank you to Nigel Parkin for bringing those comments to us.
Thank you very much indeed, Robin. And let's return to our budget conversation here. I'm speaking to Simon Denton, and Simon is in the studio with a big grin on his face. I think he's enjoying every minute of this with a little bit of luck. You could be the next radio superstar, Simon. Had you thought of that?
I don't think I'm quite ready for a career change just yet.
Oh, I don't know. Ten Radio gets under the skin. You'd never believe what happens when you get in here. Right, let me move on now to things that are going to affect an awful lot of people rather than businesses. First of all, I think I'm going to have a look at new homeowners. I mean, something has happened on the new homeowner front with the stamp duty.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a very welcome measure. There's going to be a stamp duty holiday for people, first-time buyers on residential transactions of value up to £250,000. That's between today's date and the 25th of March 2012, so a two-year window where no stamp duty will be paid. To be quite honest with you, Philip, I don't understand why this measure didn't take place nearly 2 years ago, rather than, for example, the VAT cut that we've been through. I think it would have done an awful lot more for the housing market back then than perhaps it will do now.
Do you think there are any reasons why they didn't do it?
Probably because they didn't talk to me.
I like it, yes. Quiet confidence, I think, is what I was put in that one. It does seem that it would have been a measure that would have made a substantial difference to the markets at the time.
I think, particularly when the market was in free fall in the sort of in the latter half of 2008 and early 2009, I think a stamp duty holiday then, a much bigger stamp duty holiday, may well have made the difference for people. I do question quite what the 2.5% cut in VAT achieved in real terms. I mean, when you think it turned a DVD purchase of, say, for example, £9.99 was reduced to something like £9.77, I struggle to believe that that's going to have a major impact on the economy.
Yes, it's such a small amount of money. I mean, it just doesn't seem to be relevant in any way, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think because home ownership is so prevalent in this country, I think a lot of the credit crunch has been based around consumer confidence. As soon as consumer confidence disappears, people stop going out to the shops, they stop spending money, which has an immediate knock-on effect to businesses. And I think a lot of that confidence is affected by how we feel about the value of our own homes. So many of us own our homes, and we naturally feel uneasy when we see the value of those houses tumbling.
Yeah, there is another side to this, of course. I mean, living in an area like this where income is low for a lot of people, I mean, their wages are very, very low, it's impossible for them to get on the housing market anyway, and so this £250,000 ceiling might appear to them to be irrelevant because they still can't afford to put a deposit down and to buy a house.
Absolutely.
It's one of the greatest difficulties is housing in this area, without any question.
Indeed, yeah.
You mentioned VAT. There's no changes in VAT. Do you think the change in rate of VAT some time ago made any difference whatever to the economy?
I haven't seen any statistics to suggest that it has done. No, I think as far as a lot of businesses are concerned, a lot of businesses around here are what is generally termed B2B, that is business to business. And for them, I think the VAT change made very little difference at all. No, I'm quite cynical about that particular measure. I don't think it achieved anywhere near as much as people thought it would.
Well, the trouble is you sort of looked at it from a distance and you looked at the difference in figures involved, and it seemed insignificant compared with the other things that you were looking at. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't imagine it influenced anybody to change their habits in any way.
No, I think at the time, you know, there was so much said in the wider press about the problems of consumer debt that I think that was a far greater inhibitor to people spending than a 2.5% cut in the VAT rate would be a promoter to their spending.
Talking of consumer debt, how are we standing now regarding the average debt of the average person?
I believe it has fallen considerably. I don't know the specific numbers, but I believe it has fallen quite a lot.
This sort of surprises me in a way, because I see many people under pressure in and around where I live. It may just be the people that I know are under pressure. I don't know about that one. But you say there has been a drop in that.
Well, I think there's primarily been a drop because the availability of credit has dropped considerably. So, and I think people are repaying their debts quicker. I think they have been tightening their belts. I think many people have taken the cuts in interest rates that we've experienced over the last 18 months as an opportunity to maybe keep their repayments at the same level, and just put the savings that they would have got that they will be experiencing from the lower interest rates into accelerating their repayments.
Mm. Thinking of obtaining funds again, is there any scope for green banks in this area for lending money? Do you think that green banks have an opportunity, or do we simply not have the businesses and the manufacturers in place to take advantage of what they can offer?
I think we do have niche businesses in this area. I just think that there's an awful lot more that could be done on the green agenda. I don't think there are anywhere near the level of business generating or enhancing measures in this country. If you compare it to a country such as Germany, that is a very green country, there are just so many more measures there and availability there for people to pursue a green business. I mean, for many, many years, there's been the ability for people who generate electricity off their own back, be it from, you know, a pylon, a windmill that they have in their own backyard, or a solar farm that they have, to sell it back to the national grid. As I understand it, this has only recently been announced as a measure by our government. We're many, many years behind the leading countries in this respect.
Thinking of green investments, they say they're going to put another £60 million towards wind power manufacturers in order to improve technology and assist the manufacturing process of these machines. Can only be a good thing, surely.
Oh, I would agree, absolutely.
And also, there's a hint there that there might be a new investment bank with, I think it's $2 billion equity, to raise more funding privately for zero carbon emission industries.
It can only be a positive measure. I mean, I myself have got children as well. I'd like them to grow up in a world that is, with climate change under control. It would be wrong of me to criticise measures such as this.
I think the thing is, with anything to do with green issues, is we all think that green issues are wonderful, but when we look at our own lifestyles, perhaps we don't always live as green as we ought to. So it's a difficult one, isn't it?
It is a daily challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be a change of mindset, hasn't it, from everybody in order for it to
it
all
is.
Work.
Yeah, and it's very easy when you've had a hard working day and you get home and, it's a lot easier to throw all your rubbish into one dustbin rather than to take some of it out to the recycling, but it's a challenge that we all have to try and meet.
Yep. Well, let's go back now to things that a lot of people have, ices. There's a limit rise from 7,200 to 10,200, I think, with half of it in cash. And limits will increase annually with the rate of inflation. How does that compare with what's gone before?
Well, I said, it's a very welcome measure. I think I would promote to any person out there who is saving to make sure they're making as much use as they can of ISAs. They're a very tax efficient way of saving, and it's surprising some of just how much of a nest egg you can accumulate if you're able to put the annual limit into an ISA.
Yes, I know quite a lot of people who haven't got an ISA and, in fact, don't know what one is. How does an ISA work?
I mean, an ISA, it splits into two types. There's a cash ISA, which to a large extent is broadly like any deposit account with a bank or building society, except that there's a regular commitment to save, and the interest that accumulates on that account accumulates tax-free. For most individuals, 20% tax is deducted at source from the interest that you're paid at the bank. Interest rates are pretty low at the moment, so you really need to be getting every penny you can. So taking advantage of the tax breaks, has got to be a sensible way to go.
The interest rate on ISAs at the minute is
It varies greatly depending on who you talk to. Mm. I mean, there are a number of banks that are really keen to attract deposits, and so they're offering some very beneficial rates.
So it's an excellent way to save.
It is an excellent way to save.
One thing you're saying about putting money on a regular basis into a savings plan, again, one of the problems that I know is so many people that I know just don't have any spare money to put into a savings plan because they're using it all simply for surviving.
Absolutely.
So how do you encourage people like this to actually save?
Well, I think in the first instance, one of the things you've got to look at is to look... To use a modern expression, to take a holistic look at your finances, try and establish who you owe what and what the rates of interest that you're incurring are, and then take a systematic view in trying to repay as quickly as you can anything that you're incurring the highest rates of interest on. Typically, this would be store cards or credit cards. The quicker you can reduce those balances, the more you will see your personal finances turning around. And from there onwards, it's more sensible to do that than it is to build up a great nest egg of savings.
Of course, in times gone by, and not that long gone by, we were encouraged to borrow as much money as they could wave at us. I mean, it was, in a way, a very irresponsible thing to do because a lot of people were tempted. Have things changed in that sort of credit market?
I think they have, yes. I don't think we're bombarded with the advertising that we were previously for low-rate loans.
Right, let's move on now to inheritance tax. A few changes there. How significant are they?
Well, I think actually the changes on inheritance tax, they really constitute a bit of a stealth tax. What they've basically done is frozen the inheritance tax allowance. That is what we tax professionals call the nil rate band. This is the amount of your estate that, when you die, will not actually incur inheritance tax. It's been £325,000 for the last tax year, and it's now going to be frozen until 2014-2015 at the same level. It's quite interesting to see this as a measure, because in the 3 years prior to this, the government had actually been putting up the nil rate band inheritance tax rate at more than twice the rate of inflation. So they're actually really starting to grow it. Now they're suddenly freezing it, so it's a bit of a volte face. And in many respects, once the housing market recovers, this will be a stealth tax, because typically more people have fallen into the inheritance tax net because of the increase in house prices up till 2008. And once the housing market recovers again, I think we're going to start to see more and more people falling again into the net of inheritance tax.
What sort of levels of taxation are we talking about, say, on a £500,000 house?
If you've got a £500,000 house, you'd be paying inheritance tax on £175,000 at the rate of 40%.
That's considerable, isn't it?
It is considerable, yes.
Do you tend to find this is something that people completely forget exists?
I think, actually, over the last 5 years, it's become something that clients have really started to see as a real threat. Probably in the 5 years before that, it was very difficult to get... Only the really wealthy clients would actually pay much attention to inheritance tax. But these days, a lot of people, particularly in this part of the world where house prices are typically quite high, you know, I know you said that incomes are low, but typically house prices are very high down here. There's an awful lot of people that do fall within that net.
Yes, it does seem an enormous chunk of money, you know, which isn't going to get passed on to other people later on. So, inheritance tax. Right, temporarily my brain's gone into a spin here, but which is not difficult with the budget. But I'm now going to move on to child tax credit. £4 per week increase in that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's a very welcome increase.
Is it a significant increase?
I think it's as a percentage of the amount that's involved, I think it's a reasonable amount, yes.
I suppose that begs the question, is the amount involved significant? I mean, you look at £4 and it's sort of, I don't know, three loaves of bread or four loaves of bread or something like that, and put it into context, it seems a very small amount of money.
Yes, I think when you put it in real terms, yeah, I don't think many families will struggle to spend that extra £4.
It also strikes me that something like this, in sheer administrative costs, in order to increase it by £4 a week, what are the administrative costs to the government to do this?
I shudder to think. Whenever I spend any time, whenever a legislative change comes in, there's something that's called a regulatory impact assessment, which is a document that is drafted in the Treasury, which tries to assess how much adopting a change will cost everyday people and everyday businesses. Whilst I haven't read the regulatory impact assessment on child tax credits, if one takes as an example the change in VAT, I think they estimated that the change in the VAT rate would cost the average small business somewhere in the region of about £20, which I think suggests that the people writing these reports are living in cloud cuckoo land.
Yeah, this is always the problem. It's what's the point in making a change that small if the administrative costs and the on-cost to companies and one thing and another completely defeat the object of the exercise?
Well, absolutely. And if you take a step back a few years, we had a different version of this called the Children's Tax Credit. Now, the Children's Tax Credit had significantly different rules. That was only in existence for two tax years before it was replaced with Child Tax Credit. And one really wonders the benefit of having a measure in place for that shorter period of time. You know, just consider the amount of stationery alone that has to be reprinted and issued to people. It's good business for printing.
It's quite good business for the people who implement the legislation too, isn't it? Because they're all earning their living implementing it. It does seem a very curious way of doing things. But this might be, again, my cynical mind this time. I just look at it and I think, well, in the grand scheme of things, it's a negligible amount of money. It really is. You might just as well stand on the street corner and hand pound notes out, you know.
Yeah, I think probably the reality is this is all to try and back up a view, a perception amongst the voters that this government is trying to do something to help people.
Yes, and particularly at this time, of course, any government in power at this time, if they were having an election in a few weeks or months' time, would want to do exactly the same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm trying to think how long he spoke for. It was about an hour and a quarter, was it? An hour and a half?
I think it wasn't quite. It was just about under the hour, I think.
It wasn't long, was it? It took me by surprise. I was furiously writing my notes and I thought, oh goodness, he's finished. The other thing that, of course, comes out of the budget is that I think, if I get this correctly, he says, looking at my piece of paper, hang on a second. Spending in the public sector, there increases maintained at around 2.2%, I think they said. But they have identified, £20 billion worth of cuts, but they didn't actually tell you where these cuts were coming. It was just a figure in the air. So do you think we'll probably find out where these cuts are coming after the election?
Yes. It'll be interesting to see exactly where they're going to come from. I'm sure that the message they will be trying to portray is that these cuts will not be from frontline services, so we're not going to directly see any decreases in the number of policemen or doctors and nurses that we all come into contact with. What the reality is probably that there will be an awful lot of cuts in the support staff behind those people, and inevitably that will lead to a knock-on. I see every day in my job the impact that the cuts that have been had to be borne at HM Revenue and Customs have had, and there is, I think, a noticeable decrease in the level of service that's been provided by Revenue and Customs over the last 5 years. It's a lot harder to get to talk to somebody at the Revenue who knows what they're talking about, who knows what they're doing, and ultimately taxpayers and clients are paying the cost of doing that, because it's becoming increasingly harder to get matters satisfactorily dealt with the Revenue on the basis of one telephone call or with one letter.
Yeah, the hints were that there would be economies in pensions and also in the pay bill for public servants, which means, streamlining, redundancies, one thing and another.
Yeah.
So the hints were there, but there wasn't a great deal of meat to say where this was going to be found, this £20 billion.
Well, there's been a model established for this. I think it started in the 90s in the education sector, where they reduced their costs by making redundant a lot of experienced teachers and people in the education sector, and promoting more junior staff to do those roles. The same thing was done at the Inland Revenue in the last 5 years, and one wonders if they're just going through other departments and doing exactly the same thing.
They've requested another £11 billion in savings, and it says departments are to say how. So again, we have not the faintest idea how they're going to get these £11 million in savings. But again, I suspect we'll probably know after the election.
And what also worries me about that particular statistic is to what extent that will flow through into more local services as well. Quite often, central government, when they've made a commitment, for example, some of the spending that was undertaken in education and the health service that was announced over the last 5 years, a lot of that had to be matched by local authorities, so they were looking for that money to effectively come out of council tax bills as well. So there could well be a double pressure.
It's the same old story, like we were talking about businesses in the southwest, is that the pressure trickles all the way down the line to the person on the end of it.
Absolutely.
And the person on the end of it is us.
Indeed.
So, yes. The other thing I was going to bring up is the government's plans for decentralisation, for taking offices out of London, out of expensive areas with expensive overheads, and taking them further adrift, like going off to Newcastle, isn't it, for national insurance and one thing and another.
Absolutely.
Their target there, I think, was to decentralise by one third. I don't know what year they're aiming to do that by, because I missed that bit. But I think the target for the next year is 15,000 staff, from what I read, from what he was saying.
It would be lovely to think the South West and Somerset in particular could have a slice of that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this. I mean, the Metrological Office moved down to Exeter a while ago. That was
indeed
a major coup for Exeter.
Indeed.
And thinking of Wellington, I mean, they've got a big and a brand new business park developing there, West Park One. It would be the perfect place.
Absolutely.
For a large I hope they're listening to us, for a large government office to come down here and provide plenty of employment and put a bit of new life into local communities.
So I think, there's an enormous pitch to be had for this part of the world. If one thinks that the quality of life down here, I think is second to none. I think typically labour rates are much lower than they are in other parts of the country. So I think there's a very good economic case to be had for relocating to the southwest, a beautiful part of the world and an efficient and hard-working part of the world.
Yes, aren't we lucky?
We are indeed.
I mean, three quarters of an hour in either direction, you've got wonderful coast, wonderful sea, you've got moorland, you've got the levels, you've got everything. I mean, we are very, very lucky indeed. So there are compensations, despite the fact the pressure's ending up on us in the end.
Absolutely.
For all the things we've discussed. What I'm going to do there is take another very, very short and probably totally inappropriate musical break, and we'll just come back to a general summing up of what we've been talking about towards the end of the programme. So I'm afraid you're going to have to put up with this.
You happen to be rich and you feel like a night's entertainment, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can make Ding-a-ling for the mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover, though you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take
it on the chin, call a cab and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, of that we can be sure. I'm being poor.
Money, 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 money.
Haven't any coal in the stove and your peas in the winter and you're cursed in the wind and the beat. When you haven't any shoes on your feet and you're toast in a paper and you look 30 pounds on the way. When you go to get a word of advice from the fat little pastor, he will tell you to love evermore. But when hunger comes around, rat-a-tat, at the window.
At the window.
Who's there?
Hunger.
Ugh, hunger. See how love flies out the door. For money makes the world
go round,
the world
go round,
the world
go round.
Money makes the that clinking, clanking sound of money, 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 get it,
get it, money, 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 money,
money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money, money.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
And a reminder that you're listening to a special budget programme on this Wednesday afternoon, and my guest in the studio is Simon Denton, who knows an awful lot more about this than I do. Simon, we've been talking in and around all the things that have happened in the budget. I'm going to ask you now to sum up what you think of Alistair Darling's package today in general terms.
I mean, it's no doubt about it, this is an election manifesto. You know, as a standalone budget, it's fairly insignificant, really. There's not an awful lot of particularly interesting or, I think, beneficial measures. It's broadly tax neutral. Some people will see increases, some people will see decreases. I think the important thing for local businesses is to ensure that they're getting the right advice. I think we're heading into a period of a great deal of economic and political uncertainty with the upcoming election, and the important thing is to make sure that you're getting the right advice, that you understand how the rules are going to affect you, and that you're charting the most beneficial route through all of these complex rules.
There's one thing that we've mentioned briefly in passing, which is very relevant to Wibberliscombe, which I'd suddenly come into my brain. I should have popped it in slightly earlier into the programme. We mentioned the duty on cider, which is very relevant to the area of 10%. Beers and wines, again, going up 2% above inflation, tobacco 1%. Beers and wines, big local industry, especially in Wibberliscombe. So I think we've just got time to actually hear from somebody very much involved in it.
Here I am in Cotley Brewery, a very successful business that's been brewing beer in Wibberliscombe for 30 years, talking to Fred. Fred's just listened to the budget. So what do you think of today's budget, Fred?
It was exactly as expected. No change there. Labour have continued to increase the duty. It's another 5%. That means it's another 3p on a pint in the pub. The question is, in the last 2 years, the revenue intake's been 26.1% on the duty scale. So it's tough for us, but we are a soft target, unfortunately. And what I'd like to know is why, really, are we continued to have to be targeted like this? It's unfair, because when you look at it as a small manufacturer and representing the community, it's very difficult for pubs to continue. As you know, there's so many pub closures right throughout the county. And even saying that, Somerset's been hit today because there's been another 10% above inflation for cider. And so there's a lot of disparity, and it's trying to understand what the public would need to know, what's actually going on in the manufacturing business. So it's tough times, but we will continue. We will find new avenues, and we will continue brewing consistent beer, which will help the trade.
It's like you're actually expanding and very soon, in fact, exporting to America, aren't you?
Yes, we've been very successful. That's taken probably about nearly 2 years just to get all the labeling and approvals within the federal government in the USA. And successfully, we can now sell throughout the whole of the USA. So hopefully in April, we'll be sending within the first few months here the fourth container over to the States, which is terrific. I'm in negotiations at the moment with a German brewer here as well, so we're looking to brew under license a German beer, which we can then sell in our cast as a handball, which will be something completely different for the Southwest. So it's coming out with new initiatives and finding new markets.
Well, that's brilliant, and I think I'd like to think that Cotley will still be brewing beer in 30 years' time hence.
You'll probably see me on my knees, but as long as you've got the passion and enthusiasm and I can carry the staff with that, then we must strive to try and expand. We have to safeguard the manufacturing industry. We have to employ more people. The question is, where is the industry, where's the economy going? And that's the a big question mark today.
Well, there we are. We finally reached the end of this edition of Somerset Is Go. Simon Denton, thank you very much for coming into the studio. I hope
You're
we'll
welcome.
See you again at Ten Radio.
Absolutely. I'd be delighted to.
It's been a very enlightening hour. I've enjoyed every minute of it. And as I say, thanks to Taunton Deane Borough Council for sponsoring the programmes. And from me, Philip Knighton, in the Ten Radio studio, I'm going to say goodbye. We'll see you next week for Somerset Is Go, repeated, of course, 12 o'clock on Saturdays. Bye for now.